Almost everyone has heard the word karma at some point in their life, and many people associate it with Buddhism. But in the West, the word karma is all too frequently used in a way that is not even remotely what the Buddha meant when he spoke of karma. For the Buddha, karma is an uncontroversial law of nature, just as inevitable and apparent to those who study nature deeply as the law of gravity is for contemporary physicists. For the average Westerner who has heard in passing of the concept of karma, it's often described in terms of good karma and bad karma. And it might remind us of the proverb, "What goes around comes around." This sort of karma is understood to be a sort of cosmic payback system, a cause and effect relationship in which doing bad things results in bad things happening to you in this life, and doing good things results in good things happening to you in this life. You can understand it as a sort of Newtonian law of motion applied to the moral acts of individuals, that for each action, there is a corresponding reaction in the human social sphere. Under this view of karma, being kind and agreeable to others results in others being kind and agreeable to you, so we should just be kind and agreeable to everyone. The Buddha doesn't dispute that our moral acts have an impact in this life, and he actually makes a strong case that acts of kindness are an important part of living this life well, specifically that it leads to our happiness in this life. On the other hand, the Buddha's understanding of karma extends far beyond this life, and his primary concern is to help us reach the other shore, nirvana. One thing I should mention here is that I am not an expert on Buddhism, though I've studied Buddhism in far more depth than most Westerners. I'm still learning, and there are plenty of things I don't know about Buddhism, so I'm going to convey my limited understanding of karma as I try to learn more, and hopefully this will help others to have a better understanding of karma as well. If you want to know more about the concepts, literature, and figures mentioned in this podcast, please see the link to my blog, at which I have written quite a bit on Buddhism because I've been studying it for many years. I will be reading and commenting on various portions of the Pali Canon, the oldest text of the Buddha's discourses, so that you can hear what the Buddha taught about karma. If you want to know which translation of the Pali Canon I used, that's available on the sources page of my blog. In the Pali Canon, the Buddha conveys to us the importance of reaching the other shore in very visceral and disturbing terms. He helps us to understand why we must leave the river of sorrow for the other shore in his Stream of Blood discourse with the monks of the Sangha. In this discourse, as in many of them, the Buddha is speaking to the monks who strive to follow his teachings and asking them to demonstrate their understanding of his teachings. So now I'll go ahead and read a portion of the Stream of Blood discourse. Monks, this samsara is without discoverable beginning. A first point is not discerned of beings roaming and wandering on, hindered by ignorance and fettered by craving. What do you think, monks? Which is more? The stream of blood that you have shed when you were beheaded as you roamed and wandered through this long course, this or the water in the four great oceans? As we understand the Dhamma, taught by the Blessed One, Venerable Sir, the stream of blood that we have shed when we were beheaded, as we roamed and wandered through this long course, this alone is more than the water in the four great oceans. Good, good, monks. It is good that you understand the Dharma taught by me in such a way. The stream of blood that you have shed as you roamed and wandered through this long course, this alone is more than the water in the four great oceans. For a long time, monks, you have been cows, and when, as cows, you were beheaded, the stream of blood that you have shed is greater than the waters in the four great oceans. For a long time, you have been buffalo, sheep, goats, deer, chickens, and pigs. For a long time, you have been arrested as burglars, highwaymen, and adulterers. And when you were beheaded, the stream of blood that you shed is greater than the water in the four great oceans. After the Buddha has recounted the many deaths, rebirths as different beings, and further deaths that we undergo so long as we remain in the cycle of death and rebirth, 30 of the monks were said to have experienced liberation as a result of hearing this discourse, and more importantly, understanding it. The Buddha wants us to understand that the problem is much more serious than our sufferings in this one life, that we can't stop at just being kind and agreeable to others in this life to win the cosmic rewards game show. The Buddha has something much more important to tell us about karma. For the Buddha, there are not two kinds of karma divided into the good karma and bad karma categories that are so often used in the West. The Buddha explains elsewhere in the Pali Canon that the karma we build up in the course of our lives can be of four kinds. The first is dark karma, which we might think of as bad karma. The second is bright karma, which we might think of as good karma. The third is dark and bright karma. And the fourth is karma that is neither bright nor dark. I'll read from the first part of that discourse so that we can begin to understand how karma functions. And what, monks, is dark karma with dark results? Here, monks, someone generates an afflictive volitional formation of body, speech, or mind. Having done so, he is reborn in an afflictive world. When he is reborn in an afflictive world, afflictive contacts touch him. Being touched by afflictive contacts, he experiences an afflictive feeling, extremely painful, as, for example, the beings in hell experience. This is called dark karma with dark results. And what, monks, is bright karma with bright results? Here, monks, someone generates a non-afflictive volitional formation of body, speech, or mind. Having done so, he is reborn in a non-afflictive world. When he is reborn in a non-afflictive world, non-afflictive contacts touch him. Being touched by non-afflictive contacts, he experiences a non-afflictive feeling, extremely pleasant, as, for example, the devas of refulgent glory experience. This is called bright karma with bright results. As the Buddha explains the first part of his taxonomy of karma, we learn that these forms of karma are the result of volitional acts, meaning that our karma arises from our intentional choices rather than arising from our circumstances or coerced choices. like the average Westerner, the Buddha sees karma as a product of our moral decision-making. But unlike the average Westerner, he sees that karma does not simply apply to this life. For the Buddha, our choices shape who we are in this life. And who we are in this life determines our circumstances in the next life. How does it do that? By bringing about circumstances that match how we treated ourselves and others in our previous life. So if our lives are an affliction to ourselves and others as a result of our choices, we are reborn into a world which matches the affliction we brought to ourselves and others. Just as in the Christian cosmology, hell is the natural result of a choice to separate oneself from God's love, and heaven is the natural result of uniting oneself with God's love. In the Buddhist cosmology, the afflictive, torturous worlds known as narakas are the natural result of our being an affliction to ourselves and others, and the pleasant heavenly planes of the devas of refulgent glory and Brahma are the natural result of our not being an affliction to ourselves and others. But the Buddha points out that these aren't the only possible results of our choices. Just as in certain forms of Christianity, there are states between hell and heaven, such as purgatory or limbo, so too in Buddhism, there are states in between the deepest, most torturous naraka and the highest heavenly plane. So that we can learn about these in-between states, I'll read the next part of the Buddha's discourse on karma. And what, monks, is dark and bright karma with dark and bright results? Here, monks, someone generates both an afflictive volitional formation of body, speech, or mind, and a non-afflictive volitional formation of body, speech, or mind. Having done so, he is reborn in a world that is both afflictive and non-afflictive. When he is reborn in such a world, both afflictive and non-afflictive contacts touch him. Being touched by such contacts, he experiences both an afflictive feeling and a non-afflictive feeling, a mixture and conglomeration of pleasure and pain, as for example, human beings and some devas and some beings in the lower world experience. This is called dark and bright karma with dark and bright results. What's interesting here is that the Buddha saw a broad range of worlds into which we move based on our choices in each life. A set of worlds which seem to the Western mind to exist along a moral spectrum, a spectrum that spans from the deepest suffering in the most terrifying naraka to a completely pleasant experience on the highest heavenly plane. And somewhere in the middle of this spectrum, the world we experience as human beings exposes us to a bit of both. This leaves us somewhere in the murky middle, able to tumble into a lower world after death, and then tumble to several more even lower worlds, or rise up to a higher heavenly world, and keep ascending to even higher heavenly planes. Understandably, our first inclination, upon accepting the truth of the Buddha's vision, might be to strive with all our strength for bright karma so that we can reach the highest heavenly plane. But one more type of karma remains for us to understand, and it's the most important one, the karma which liberates us from the cycle of death and rebirth. And what, monks, is karma that is neither dark nor bright, with neither dark nor bright results, which leads us to the destruction of karma? The volition to abandon this dark karma with dark results, and to abandon the bright karma with bright results, and to abandon the dark and bright karma with the dark and bright results. This is called the karma that is neither dark nor bright, with neither dark nor bright results, which leads to the destruction of karma. The Buddha, much like the Western mystics of the Christian, Islamic, and Baha'i traditions, calls us to something beyond a life of seemingly endless pleasure. He invites us to something even greater, an existence which transcends mere existence and ends our vision of the world that is obsessively focused on our suffering or the lack thereof. The Buddha does not mince words when he describes the relative insignificance of trying to gain a pleasant future life by building up merit in this life. I'll now read a brief excerpt from one of his discourses to show you how emphatic the Buddha was on this point. Monks, whatever grounds there are for making merit productive of a future birth, all these do not equal a 16th part of the liberation of mind by loving kindness. The liberation of mind by loving kindness shines forth, bright and brilliant. And just as in the night, at the moment of dawn, the morning star shines forth, bright and brilliant, even so, whatever grounds there are for making merit productive of a future birth, all these do not equal a 16th part of the liberation of mind by loving kindness. The liberation of mind by loving kindness surpasses them and shines forth bright and brilliant. The Buddha sees the path to liberation of our minds from our obsession with suffering or the lack thereof as starting very simply with acts of loving kindness which gradually shape us in such a way that we are freed of our egotistical ways of thinking and begin to think in a genuinely selfless way. This is an important part of how we learn to destroy karma. So, how do we train ourselves to bring about the destruction of karma? How do we begin this process of growth in selflessness? The Buddha, who is ever the incisive physician of the mind, presents us with the tools and techniques to begin the healing process, which can help us rid ourselves of our selfishness if we apply them consistently. So, what are those tools and techniques? I'll read another passage from the Buddha's discourses to help explain his perspective. The Buddha said to Anathapindika, "In the past, householder, there was a Brahmin named Velama. He gave such a great alms offering as this, 84,000 bowls of gold filled with silver, 84,000 bowls of silver filled with gold, 84,000 bronze bowls filled with bullion, 84,000 elephants, chariots, milk cows, maidens, and couches, many millions of fine cloths, and indescribable amounts of food, drink, ointment, and bedding. As great as was the alms offering that Velama gave, it would be even more fruitful if one were to feed even a single person possessed of right view. As great as the Brahmin Velama's alms offering was, and though one would feed 100 persons possessed of right view, it would be even more fruitful if one would feed a single once returner. It would be even more fruitful if, with a trusting mind, one would go for refuge to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha, and would undertake the 5 precepts, abstaining from the destruction of life, from taking what is not given, from sexual misconduct, from false speech, and from the use of intoxicants. As great as all this might be, it would be even more fruitful if one would develop a mind of loving kindness, even for the time it takes to pull a cow's udder. And as great as all this might be, it would be even more fruitful still if one would develop the perception of impermanence just for the time it takes to snap one's fingers. We learn here that the Buddha recommends giving to others as an important tool in cultivating selflessness, and that he also recommends giving to those who are already cultivating selflessness to help them on their journey to selflessness by increasing their sense that their lives are not an act of self-reliance, but rather that their lives depend on the goodness of others. Accepting the selfless gifts of others in conjunction with giving selflessly to others gradually breaks our reliance on our own strength and also breaks our attachments to the things of this life. The consequence of this discipline is that we are confronted over and over again with our own weakness, our own frailty, and the fundamental impermanence of this life. For the Buddha, it is very good to give generously to others who are still unaware of the truth about the world. It is better to give generously to those who are aware of the truth about the world so that they can be supported on their way to leaving behind the cycle of death and rebirth. And it is best of all to begin the liberation of our own consciousness from our obsession with pleasure and pain by realizing our own impermanence. This is how we begin to destroy the dark and bright karma that both lead to our continued participation in the cycle of death and rebirth. In the end, the Buddha's teaching on karma is given to us because we need to understand karma so that we can let it go. We've now come to the end of the podcast, and I hope you found it helpful in understanding karma as taught by the Buddha, and also how the Buddha taught his disciples to escape the trap of trying to merely avoid bad karma and achieve good karma. I shortened the Buddha's discourses somewhat to keep the podcast at a reasonable length, but I encourage people to read them in their entirety, if possible. I'm not sure yet if I want to do another podcast related to Buddhism, but I will if people request it. If you subscribe to the podcast, then you can listen to the next episode as soon as it's published, rather than having to wait until I get it posted on social media along with the sources. Thank you so much for listening, and have a lovely evening.